Hey, CE Plan members from CE Impact, this is Game Changers. I'm Jen Moulton, and this week we're talking about the recent measles outbreak in at least four states, I think, as of this recording, since the beginning of the year. So with me today, we have two experts who will help us dive into how we got here and what's next for this disease that was essentially eliminated in the United States a little over 20 years ago. So with us today, we have Elizabeth Skoy and Lacey Epperson. So welcome to you both.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Lacey, can you just kind of introduce yourself? Maybe tell us a little bit about your pharmacy practice and the perspective that you bring to this conversation today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen. Thanks for having me. I serve as the Director of Clinical Services at Mitchell's Drugstores in Neosho, Missouri. We're in a rural town, so we serve a lot of not just our county, but neighboring counties as well, neighboring towns as well. So I would say that we do have a high population of vaccine hesitant individuals. Additionally, I spend a lot of time in work with CPSN Missouri, and we're actually working on a vaccine gap hesitancy project right now. So this has been a really hot topic for us recently, and how do we close those gaps in care? And I'm a huge advocate for closing those gaps in care related to work that can be done not just by the pharmacist, we can use that clinical knowledge, but also through an extension of community health workers who I spend a lot of time training as well. So that's a little bit of a brief look into my life and a lot of where I spend my time recently.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to dig into that a little bit. So thank you so much for being with us today. And Elizabeth Skoy, also we have with us. And Elizabeth, you're a regular faculty member with us here at CE Impact and do a lot in the immunization space. So for those of you who don't, or our listeners, I guess, that don't know you, can you tell us a little bit about you and your practice?
Yeah, so I'm also a community pharmacist. I'm practicing community pharmacist, and I do a lot of work in the vaccination space. And so I collaborate a lot with the center here at where I'm a faculty member at North Dakota State University, and that center is the Center for Immunization Research and Education. So I've done some statewide, national, regional projects, just looking at increasing vaccine acceptance, immunization rates. I've been a creator for some of the programs for technician and pharmacist delivery of immunizations. And then more recently, I was named as the pharmacist representative from the American Pharmacists Association on the ACIP work group for adult RSV vaccine. So spend a lot of time and space in the vaccine world, which I love.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even know that you were on that ACIP committee. So that's a big one right now.
Yeah. Yeah. We're busy.
Yeah. Lots of time, I'm sure. Well, thank you. Thank you both for being here today. And as I was saying, like before we started, the great thing about Game Changers is we try to keep up with, what's hot and what's new. And the bad thing is I emailed you both this week and said, hey, can we do this real quick? Because this is a hot topic. So thank you. I know you didn't have a ton of time to prepare, but that's also the beauty of this is, just kind of talking about your expertise and sort of in the moment what's happening. So I'd like to start by just looking back at the history of measles, at least in the United States. And Dr. Skoy, what did our world look like before we had a measles vaccine?
Yeah, so I think sometimes, especially since you had mentioned, Jen, that measles has technically been eradicated from the United States, I think we sometimes forget about measles because if you think about it, most of us growing up and maybe even our parents never really, experienced measles. And so it's one of those things that's an easy disease, I guess, to forget that it has serious consequences. And so just to kind of understand really before the vaccine came into play, before the mid-1960s, there was usually endemics every 2 to 3 years that happened worldwide with measles. And so typically there was, anywhere between like 2 to 3 million deaths annually worldwide from measles. And so really even though we say that it's been eradicated in the United States, which technically it has, although we're having these pockets and these outbreaks, which we'll talk about, there's still over 100,000 people, usually children, which is usually, under the age of 5 or so, that die from measles worldwide annually. So, this is still a disease that's active around the globe and has severe consequences. We've come a long way, obviously, since the introduction of the vaccine, but still recognizing that it can still be a really severe and deadly disease.
Yeah. And so what are the reasons that we're having this resurgence? I mean, I know, like when I was looking at some of the tables online, you could see that there are times where it, increases. I think 2019 was one of those, or there were, quite a few. But already, in January, we've had, or I guess it's February now, but, in the first month of the year, we're already reporting a good number, which isn't great outlook for the rest of the year. So I know there's CDC warnings about this increased incidence. And so what do you think are the reasons that this is happening?
Yeah, so really the only, major and logical explanation of this is under vaccination and reduction in vaccination and rates. And so when we think of herd immunity, right? So meaning that as a group and as a population, we get vaccinated, and so that we prevent that endemic status and the spreading of a disease for maybe individuals that haven't been vaccinated, or for individuals that maybe the vaccine wasn't effective for, or they can't get vaccinated, and that prevents the spreading of the disease. And so for herd immunity to for measles, and it's argued if it's like 93%, 96%, but we say on average about 95% of the population needs to be vaccinated. And what we've been seeing ever since really like 2020 is we've been seeing the national vaccination rates for measles decreasing slightly. And so as a whole, as like a as a country, we're still technically above, but the herd immunity rate, but we're getting close, So when you go from a 98%, 96, 98%, you start dropping, right? And you need about 95, 96% to be herd immunity. It can be a little scary. And then I think it also depends upon the pockets that this is happening in. And so a lot of the data, I haven't personally dug down into the county level specific data, but if you look at some of the ones that we've heard more recently with like Georgia and Missouri, they're definitely below, if like as a state, their published vaccination rates against measles, accepting the measles, mumps, rubella, or MMR vaccine, they're below the herd immunity threshold. And so, that's kind of scary. It's showing that as a community, as a population, if you are not vaccinated, you're going to have these diseases come back and resurge.
Yeah, well, and you referenced kind of at the county level. I know, Lacey, you have been working with a project in Missouri, and so maybe you could address that kind of more at that county level. And what are you hearing from patients about why they're not being vaccinated? I know there's a lot of since COVID, I think we've had a lot of conversations about vaccines, which is so interesting to me. I feel like we've been kind of doing. Well, we have been doing training since 1999. And I, in the beginning, it was like when we were doing that, it's like this is kind of, I don't mean to say like a no-brainer, but like, everybody gets vaccinated. You always have had people that have said, I want to change the schedule, or, you have kind of some of those rogue people. But I feel like it's becoming more and more, which is scary when we think about, some of, measles back and MMR and, what that can mean for other diseases that have essentially been out of our lives, all of us as adults.
Yeah, so I think just like what you alluded to, Jen, with a lot of sources of misinformation and gaps in education surrounding the safety of vaccination, there are higher instances of vaccine hesitancy in general, which results in no protection against preventable diseases like the measles. I think a huge thing that we're seeing a lot with parents trying to make decisions is they're doing research on what they believe to be reputable sources, and they're trying to determine risk versus benefit. This is the conversation I have with our CHWs all the time, is risk versus benefit. And unfortunately, I believe that there are a lot of individuals that believe the vaccine to not be as safe. But when you do this, the research and the studies, like what Dr. Skoy was saying, this is deadly. So it kind of surprises me. But I'm wondering if we're hearing of these one-off instances. And it's just like everything you're hearing in the news. People want to pull the information that catches someone's eye, or that pops up on the first article whenever you're Googling something. So I do think that that can be really challenging to try to put on a front of we care about your health as a whole. And so whenever I'm talking to you about eating healthy and exercise and supplements, vaccines are part of that prevention as well. And so it gets very challenging, but I think it's kind of changing that mindset surrounding how we educate patients, as there has been a push recently, which is great for whole foods and natural ways and preventable measures, but vaccination is a preventable measure. So I think it's important to remind patients of that as well.
Yeah, for sure. So, talk a little bit, either one of you, about the safety of the MMR vaccine.
So again, this is a vaccine that's been, given since, the 1960s, right? And millions of doses have been delivered. And we also see the prevention that the number of cases and deaths that have dramatically decreased since the vaccination. So we know it's F, you know, we and we see that safety and we see that efficacy. Just like any medicine, and we say this with vaccines too, that there is rare occurrences that you could have a side effect. The MMR vaccine is a live vaccine. And so sometimes people get, especially children, when you're giving it to them, they might not, they might get a fever a couple of days later, or, and so you might still see some of those side effects. But there again, the side effects that you're experiencing with the vaccine are far, far less than what it is that you would, experience if you actually got measles itself, or mumps or rubella. In addition, if we think back to the first claim that vaccines caused autism, that fake paper, remember, that has all been published false, and the research has been shown to be, not ethical and false information, that was fabricated. But that was on the MMR vaccine. So they were making a false claim against the MMR vaccine. So I think that's kind of part of that too. And one other thing, just to go back a little bit to measles, is just the, again, since we haven't experienced this disease, or most of us haven't, we forget how incredibly dangerous that particular virus is, and the fact that it's so incredibly contagious. And that's why you see these crazy outbreaks, because it's this weird virus that, when for was spreading. And I think Dr. Offit's made this analogy before, Dr. Paul Offit, and I use it even when I'm talking with my students, is the droplets hang out like little ghosts in the air. Like, they can literally leave, like, be suspended and left in the air for hours. And so we always say that any infectious disease is a plane ride away, right? So if you go through an airport and somebody had just been to a country that is the measles isn't eradicated, or it's that, or they went and traveled somewhere, or they went through an airport where somebody had measles and it stays in the their they don't even know they have measles, because you're contagious for 7 days before you present with it. Plus, it's highly contagious. They just could walk through the same security line that somebody did recently, and you can get measles. And so I think, like, that there's a combination of that too, that we have this false, like, oh, we're eradicating the US, we don't have to worry about it. Well, we have international and global travel, and anyone can be exposed to the disease.
Yeah. So, and you mentioned, a lot of us, well, most of us haven't seen it. So what does it look like? I mean, I know that, there are these pockets, but that doesn't make any of, any other state immune. If you're not in, what is it, like Pennsylvania, Georgia, New Jersey, and Lacey, it's in Missouri as well, right? Was there a little outbreak there too? So what does it look like? Like, what do we look for if we have patients that come in and I mean, I know it's a rash, but what are the differentiators?
Yeah, so I can talk a little bit to that, but so a lot of times it can come on as, of course, like, there's usually a rash associated with it, and then you'll usually see, like, a high fever, cough, runny nose. So those are things that we see sometimes even with other, besides the rash, which is sometimes the telltale sign of measles. The other symptoms can be really similar to what we would see with other respiratory issues. However, I think that you have to also realize that the complications from measles can be really high. And so, on average, of those that contract measles, one in five are hospitalized. And so you can have some really severe complication of measles. And those that are really Most at risk are pregnant women or are really young children. Those are the ones that, so children less than five, which I already mentioned. Those are some of those. And so some of the complications might just be as like a, developing onto an ear infections, but others can lead to pneumonia or encephalitis or swelling of the brain. And so there again, I think recognizing that, it can be a really severe illness.
Lacey, can you talk a little bit about? I know that in your pharmacy, you're working on a vaccine hesitancy project. And so, what are you talking to patients about? And what do you, what can we do as pharmacists and technicians to continue to close this vaccine gap so that, we can have an impact? The CDC warning was loud and clear. And so, what can we do to advance that?
Yeah, so the way I like to compare how we're operating these things is in two buckets. So I believe that we have two really great opportunities to routinely capture these patients, one of which is through education and outreach in the community. So whenever we're at community events, which we make an effort to attend and intentionally orchestrate. But the second is through utilizing adherence programs, which we very much lean on and regiment, which allows us to provide care for the patient in ways outside of medication optimization that include follow-up and monitoring. So at our pharmacy, we utilize, I mentioned our community health workers previously who have gone through this specialized training. But what they do is they administer SDOH screening, so social determinants of health. I'm a very muchly a believer in how this process works. So social determinants of health essentially are the conditions and environments where the person lives, is born, works, and plays that contribute to and influence their health outcomes. So examples of these social determinants of health might include health literacy, housing insecurity, inconsistent transportation, and financial barriers as well. So all of these factors that I just mentioned, and there are many others, by the way, but all these factors that I just mentioned contribute to the buzzword health equity, which ensures that individuals have an equal and fair opportunity to achieve high levels of health outcomes. So I think as community pharmacies, we can there are a lot of ways for us to contribute to and ensure health equity. But ultimately, when we eliminate and alleviate some of these barriers that I mentioned, so whether it is transportation, that's a common one. Whenever we're making a phone call at the end of our adherence calls, and a patient says, "Well, but I don't have a way of getting there because they're used to us delivering." Well, is there a way for us to take this to the patient's home? So, and that's just like I said, that's a one-off example. If it's a financial barrier, we likely have resources in the community where we can refer these patients to. And when we're able to eliminate some of these barriers by being intentional with these interventions and educational opportunities, we're able to ensure that we're delivering these equitable services. So, our community health workers, just to kind of take a step back, they are local individuals who live and work in the communities that they are serving. So, the primary basis of their work is a referral system where they're utilizing their developed resources in the community to enhance this access to care. So, another example of how this may look in our community specifically, and it will look different to every community, but that might be some overlap, is through various connections with local child centers, parent programs, a local pregnancy and parenting center there, outreach through the schools, and partnering with the local health department and other health centers. Through those connections, we're able to reach patients that are unreachable through resources that allow us to deliver services to their places of residence and places of work. So, I just think. I guess I would really encourage and empower community pharmacies to really take a look at your own community first, and start with your community because these are the people that are coming to you because they trust you as their local pharmacy. And instead of them trying to read information online or listen to what they're hearing on the news or talking to their friend that they heard this from, they trust us. They've become friends with us. They know they can call us, and we're one of the most accessible healthcare providers. So I just would encourage you to also do your research, find your way of being able to communicate with patients. And I think it's appropriate to be consistent and frequent with these messages. So I hope that answered that.
Yeah, do you so as it relates to vaccines then, do you have specific messages that you're constantly, you're constantly asking patients if they're up to date on their vaccines or what, what are the ways that you're making inroads in that space specifically?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I try to be, I've tried a couple of different approaches at this. One, I've made a theme for our pharmacy each quarter. So I focus on, like, I can't remember exactly what I did last year, but one quarter maybe we focus on pneumonia. The next quarter maybe we focus on shingles. And so through that effort, I'm able to talk to my staff first. I also talk to them about billing and what that looks like as far as, what we're allowed to do in our state and the legislature behind that. And here's how we develop protocols so that they're learning the pharmacy side as well. Then, how do we talk to patients is step two. I do utilize our pharmacy management system to automate a lot of these reminders for our staff. And so they can't really get around it. And if they do, I know. So that's one way, to make sure that we're all being consistent. And then whenever we're talking to patients, there is a fine line. My community health workers are there for the initial outreach, the referral process, but the pharmacist ultimately is, it's their clinical discretion. So I think it's important to kind of define these parameters as well. And one way that I've done that is by really making a push. So we try to focus marketing around whatever that vaccine was. We try, including, hey, did you know that your Part D now covers the shingle shot, for example? We try to just be really intentional during that phase. The second part of that is maybe focusing on relevance to what's occurring. So if I'm going to capture someone for a flu shot, I usually, ironically, don't get a lot of people when the flu shot when it first comes in my door. When I start seeing people requesting the flu shot is when they've started being exposed to people with the flu. So I think just kind of taking it where you can as well. And so I've been focusing a lot recently on different respiratory preventable measures, including RSV, pneumonia, COVID, flu. Those have been our most recent pushes. And so I kind of want my staff to cherry pick those first as they're high priority in my mind as well. If I'm going to vaccinate my family for that right now, then what do we need to be talking about patients and just putting ourselves in their shoes? And I also try to think about what questions I may ask as a parent as well. So that's kind of our approach for right now. But like I said, we mostly lean on tacking this onto the end of their call. We're caring for their whole health. So yes, we're reviewing your medicines, but we're also asking you about over-the-counter medicines. We're also asking you if you're up to date on your labs. We're also checking on, we've got this whole slew of things that we're doing while we're already having that patient touch point. So why can't we also check in on this preventable measure as well?
Well, it's a great way to build trust. And so then when things like this come up where it's like, okay, you need to do this, then they have some trust with you that, what they're reading is maybe not science-based. Elizabeth, do you have anything else that you do in your pharmacy specifically as it relates to vaccine, particularly with the MMR as well?
To be honest with you, we haven't really needed to target MMR vaccine. So I think one thing, just on a, some of the work I've done in collaboration nationally and in pharmacy networks is that one thing we can do as pharmacists is we can just be involved in our advocacy for our profession and vaccine legislation within our states. A lot of some of the national buzz has been just a lot of this comes from like kindergarten exemptions. And so not getting vaccinated against MMR and having the MMR vaccine, typically that's a required vaccine for kindergarten entry, but every state's different in what they allow for an exemption status. And so states that actually have really hard to get exemptions are have a lot better rates than states that, anyone can really sign an exemption. And, so I think that's one thing. For other vaccines, I mean, we do a lot with vaccine in general. Of one thing we've been doing now, and something that people could consider doing in their own state, is we do look at our county level data, and so we work really closely with our Department of Health and Human Services, and we look at our county level data, and we've actually been doing some targeting county level data with particularly looking at influenza rates. But I mean, even in our state, I'll be honest, and sometimes it has to do with access and population, because I'm from North Dakota, we're a rural state, but there's some MMR rates in counties that are pretty scary. I think to myself, oh my gosh, I hope nobody travels to any of these countries, and so the other thing that, just looking at, I think that pharmacists can do, and we're trying to do a bigger push for pharmacy to be involved in pediatric vaccine. And so a lot of times I think we've just been targeting the adult population, which is fantastic. We've done a phenomenal job at that and keep up that great work. But if we haven't, if our state allows it, in our, protocols and things like that, but to consider, vaccinating that, potentially with the PrEP Act, it was three and up. So a lot of states are allowing for that now. So looking at that three and up range for vaccination and getting some of their, making sure that our pediatric patients are up to date.
Yeah. Well, and I think too, as people see this in the news, because it's like, everything is media driven. And so you see it in the media, and I can imagine, if you had a patient or a parent who was, potentially vaccine hesitant, now they're like, oh, this is real. Like, I maybe need to think about this. And that opens the door for pharmacy to play a role, where we didn't before, where you relied on those, well child checkups and all of that. But if you just had that and now this comes up, then you have an opportunity in pharmacy to close that gap. So there's definitely, I think those conversations are so important, even when we think they might not be. There's things like this that happen that really bring us back into the fold. So staying current on, what those guidelines are and ACIP guidelines. I know new ones just came out, mostly adult. I think the beginning of the year changes, and nothing related specifically to MMR, but a lot with RSV. So to your point, being on that committee, there's a lot in that space right now. So being current on that, I think, is really important. So as things like this come up, you can be a really good resource and be a trusted resource. So yeah, that's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do either one of you have anything else to add? This was a great conversation. You think when things are eliminated or eradicated that we're not dealing with this again, but these things always happen. So it's good to get a little refresher on where we were and where we don't want to be again. So any
Yeah.
last words, either one of you?
Not necessarily, but I mean, one thing again, just kind of reiterating, pharmacy, this is also a really great way for, Lacey mentioned a lot of options or opportunities for outreach. I think this is a really great opportunity for pharmacies to do outreach or just checking, especially if you're in one of those states that have the lower vaccination rates, thinking of ways that you can do, or is there outreach events or things like that you can do to try to help get individuals aware, like what the great work that Lacey and her team is doing, or even, providing the vaccine itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to add either. I appreciate that, and I appreciate Dr. Skoy's expertise. I think the point that she mentioned about being intentional with pediatrics, I think, is a really important piece as well. And it kind of has me thinking with how do we make those connections? So kind of tying that back to being intentional with your resources in your community. And so if you can make those right connections and catch parents at the right time and catch the appropriate individuals that are talking to parents and individuals that are ultimately making these decisions for the candidates that need to be screened for vaccination, I think that can be really influential in how we can help change this thing around.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you both so much for being with me today, and especially on, kind of a quick notice. I appreciate that, and being able to pivot quickly so that we can address what's happening in the world. So it's been a pleasure talking to both of you. Thank you for all the work you're doing in your communities, and it is making a difference. So thank you. And to all of our listeners, as always, have a great week and keep learning. We'll talk soon.